My work is joint work with Young-hoon Kim, Francis Kerwin, and John Wolfe. And plan is as follows. Some of the talk will be in the language of geometric invariant theory rather than simply symplectic quotients. And I will describe the Kerwin map, partial desingularizations, how we reduce from symplectic quotients by non-abelian groups to symplectic quotients by abelian groups, intersection pairings, and a construction of Witten that is related to this. So if you have a symplectic manifold that is acted on by a compact Lie group, the moment map is an equivariant map, and it enables us to form symplectic quotients, meaning you take the preimage of a coadjoint orbit under the moment map, I'll call the orbit O lambda, and then divide that by the action of the group. Special case, the best known case is M sub 0, which is the preimage of 0. 0 itself is the orbit through 0, quotiented by K. And if the group is already an abelian group, a torus, then the coadjoint action is trivial, so our definition just reduces to the preimage of lambda itself rather than the orbit through it, because lambda is itself the orbit through lambda, quotiented by K. So that's what this terminology means when you have a torus action, an abelian group action. The key fact is that 0 is a regular value of the moment map if and only if the symplectic quotient corresponding to 0, M sub 0, is an orbifold, has at worst finite quotient singularities. What's going on here is that 0 is a regular value of the moment map if and only if the group acts with finite stabilizers on the inverse image of 0. Special case of this is that if the group acts freely on the preimage of 0, so, of course, perforce it acts with finite stabilizers. If it acts freely, then 0 is a regular value. That means that mu inverse of 0 is a manifold. And also, because it acts freely, mu inverse of 0 quotiented by K is a smooth manifold. So that's the best case of this situation. If the group acts freely on the zero-level set, then you get a smooth manifold. More generally, if 0 is a regular value, 0 is a regular value if and only if what you have, the quotient, is an orbifold. What I'd like to talk about today is what happens in the situation where you don't have an orbifold. What happens when the quotients have worse singularities? Some of the standard results can be generalized, and I will present some of these generalizations. I have talked so far about the language of symplectic geometry, symplectic quotients. All of this can be phrased in the language of geometric invariant theory. If you have a Kähler manifold, So it's automatically symplectic because the Kähler form is a symplectic form. You could ask that it have an action of a complex group, which I will write as the complexification of our compact group K. And then the complex group is required to preserve the complex structure, the holomorphic structure on the Kähler manifold. It won't, of course, preserve the symplectic structure, but you do require, the subgroup K will be required to preserve both the symplectic and the complex structure. A special case of this is what is called a projective manifold. So that's one way that you get Kähler manifolds, submanifolds of projective space for which there is an action of a complex group on a linear action, a linear representation on C to the n plus 1. And so then G acts on the projective space. That's one situation where you get this structure. So projective manifolds are one example of Kähler manifolds. In this situation, there is a way of recovering symplectic quotients. They appear as geometric invariant theory quotients. So the language is that a point in our Kähler manifold is said to be stable if the zero locus of the moment map meets the complex orbit, the orbit of the complex group through that point, at a point whose stabilizer is finite. More generally, you could require that the zero locus of the moment map meets the closure of the orbit of the complex group in a non-trivial way. Those points are called semi-stable points. And the geometric invariant theory quotient is defined as the set of semi-stable points quotiented by the complex group action. Now, if all the semi-stable points are stable, then this object is an orbifold. And in fact, this object is the symplectic quotient. This was proved by Mumford, Gilliman, Sternberg, Kirwan, and Kempf and Ness. The geometric invariant theory quotient is equal to the symplectic quotient. There is a map between the equivariant cohomology, now with respect to the compact group K, and the ordinary cohomology of the reduced space. The way this is defined in the situation when you do have a regular value of the moment map, so zero regular. In that situation, you define the Kirwan map as the map that is just induced by the restriction map from M to mu inverse of zero in equivariant cohomology. And since K acts with finite stabilizers, when you use rational coefficients, the K equivariant cohomology of mu inverse of zero is the same thing as the ordinary cohomology of the symplectic quotient. So that's the definition of the Kirwan map in the regular value case. And in the regular value case, Kirwan proved that the Kirwan map is surjective. Every element of the ordinary cohomology of the quotient comes from an element of the equivariant cohomology of the original manifold. If zero isn't a regular value of the moment map, then there is an equivariant blow-up of the manifold M the so-called partial desingularization of M, which was defined by Francis Kirwan. And it has the property that the group G, the complex group, acts on M tilde, the blow-up, and this quotient has only orbifold singularities. So you have desingularized the quotient. I will come back to that in a later section. So that object is introduced in the situation when zero isn't a regular value of the moment map. And in this situation, you define the Kirwan map by taking the map in equivariant cohomology from M, the semistable points in M, to the semistable points in the desingularization, which is the same thing as the cohomology of the desingularization, because now you have only finite stabilizers. And that is the same thing as the intersection homology of this quotient. And then there is a map down in intersection homology to the intersection homology of the quotient, the singular quotient. So that is how the Kirwan map is defined in this more general situation. It is no longer obvious that the Kirwan map is surjective. And in fact, my collaborator, Young-Hoon Kim, determined that the map was surjective and a way to, and defined a subset of the cohomology of the desingularization, which maps isomorphically onto the intersection homology under certain conditions. The conditions that he introduced were a condition called weakly balanced.
I think what intersection is more than
A? With middle perversity. I think we need. Well, yes, always rational, real, or complex coefficients. I suppose so. But there is a way to treat it using a Durham theoretic version, which is due to Jean-Luc Brilinski. So the condition that Young-Hoon Kim introduced was called weakly balanced. If you have a linear action on a complex vector space, then the action is said to be weakly linearly balanced if the dimension of the reduced space of the vector space, which will be a quotient of a hyperboloid, if you think about how moment maps on vector spaces work out, they are a quadratic map, so you want zero of a quadratic map, so that will be some hyperboloid. The dimension of that has to be less than the codimension of the vertex of the cone under the quotient map from V to the quotient. So that is the linearly balanced condition. An action on a manifold is said to be weakly balanced if it satisfies this condition on the normal bundles to orbits of fixed point sets. So you take subgroups and their fixed point sets for the action on the manifold, and you insist that the action of the subgroup be weakly linearly balanced on all of the fibers. There's a similar condition that is imposed on subgroups and subspaces. So for example, the action of C star on projective space is weakly balanced if and only if the number of positive and negative weights are equal. You'll have n plus 1 weights, integers, specifying the action of C star on projective space. And so the number of positive weights has to be equal to the number of negative weights. The action of SU2 and its maximal torus on projective space, also on a product of CP1s, product of S2s, those actions are weakly balanced. More examples of weakly balanced actions are provided by moduli spaces of holomorphic vector bundles over a Riemann surface. And Keem proved that if the action of a complex group G on a manifold is weakly balanced, then we can split the Karun map to obtain a subspace of the equivariant cohomology of the original manifold on which the restriction of the Karun map is an isomorphism onto the intersection homology. So this map would go like this, this splitting map. So not only is the map surjective, not only is the Karun map surjective, but you can find a way to split the map. The definition of this subspace V sub M is that when you restrict an element of equivariant cohomology to the orbit of some fixed point set, the fixed point set of some subgroup R, then what you get is going to be an element of the equivariant cohomology with respect to a subgroup of the fixed point set, tensored with the equivariant cohomology of a point with coefficients in R, so H star BR H star R point. And the subspace VM is defined by the condition that the degree of elements in the R equivariant cohomology of a point is less than some bound. So we require that only elements of degree less than the dimension of the reduced space of the normal bundle are involved in this sum. No, because Kerwin's earlier result was for the case of regular value. Well, you don't need to do this. In the case of regular value, intersection homology reduces to the ordinary cohomology. Yes, it is a special case of this, but it's vacuous because the intersection homology is the same as the ordinary homology. So, for example, you can look at the action of SU2 on CPN coming from a representation of the n plus 1 dimensional representation of SU2. In that case, the equivariant cohomology with respect to of the projective space with respect to the maximal torus, which is just U1, is generated by two equivariant cohomology classes, both of degree 2. One of them, which I'll denote by zeta, is the generator of the equivariant cohomology of a point. So the other one is the equivariant cohomology class of the equivariant extension of the symplectic form. The symplectic form is not not equivariantly closed. You have to extend it to an equivariant cohomology class, the symplectic form plus the moment map, that is equivariantly closed. And you can think of that as being the other generator. So think of zeta generator of H star T the point, and psi is the class of omega plus moment map. That class is equivariantly closed. So those two classes, both of degree 2, generate the equivariant cohomology subject to one relation. The relation can be thought of as saying that the restriction of the relation to each of the components of the fixed point set of the U1 action is zero. There are n plus one elements in this product, and each of them represents a point where each of them restricts to zero at one component of the fixed point set. So the product restricts to zero at all of the components of the fixed point set, and Kirwan's injectivity theorem says that this element is zero in equivariant cohomology of the quotient. That is the T equivariant cohomology of this manifold. The K equivariant cohomology is generated by those elements that are invariant under the Weyl group. The Weyl group is just Z2, and it sends the generator of the equivariant cohomology of a point to minus itself. It fixes the generator corresponding to the equivariant extension of the symplectic form. So the K equivariant cohomology of the manifold is generated by psi, the equivariant extension of the symplectic form, and zeta squared, subject to the same relation. The subspace that corresponds to the intersection homology, isomorphically, is given by those elements for which the degree in zeta, the generator of the equivariant cohomology of a point, is less than n over 2 minus 2. So that is how this works out in one specific example. Now, I mentioned already how one forms the partial desingularization. There is essentially I didn't realize maybe the backlights are actually better. Okay, I didn't realize that. Can you see the Can you see the slides with the light on? Okay. I hadn't realized that this was the way to do this. So, to form the partial desingularization, you should look at subgroups that are the stabilizer of some point in the manifold. So that will be some set of subgroups, finite set of conjugacy classes of subgroups. So we index them by a positive integer little r, which is the dimension of the subgroup. And we first resolve the singularities of those fixed point sets that correspond to the subgroup with the maximal dimension. And then, after resolving those singularities, you obtain a subspace that still has an action of G, which covers the action on the original manifold M. And all subgroups that occur as stabilizers have dimension less than R. So then you repeat this process for subgroups of lower dimension, and finally you are left with a manifold that has an action of G for which only finite stabilizers occur, and that is our partial desingularization M tilde. So that is the partial desingularization. And because M tilde quotiented by G is an orbifold, earlier results of myself and Kirwan imply that the evaluation of any equivariant cohomology class or its image in the ordinary cohomology is the same thing as the evaluation of the same class on the quotient only by the maximal torus. That comes from earlier work of myself with Kirwan. This is the same thing as M tilde mod xi t, meaning that you are reducing at the point xi. But for generic values of xi, this would be the same thing as reducing the original manifold at xi, because the reduction of the original manifold at a generic value would in fact be an orbifold. So this identification is my earlier work with Kirwan, and the fact that it is in fact identified with the reduction of the original manifold M for a generic value xi. Here, A is a constant that depends only on the group and orders of stabilizers. And Cal D is a fixed class in the equivariant cohomology of a point, which maps, of course, to the equivariant cohomology of any manifold. Cal D is, in fact, just the product of all the positive roots. So this lives in the equivariant cohomology of a point because that is the polynomial ring on the Lie algebra of the maximal torus. And xi is some small constant in the Lie algebra. Since the quotient has only orbifold singularities, the right-hand side can be computed in terms of the fixed point set of the maximal torus on M using my earlier work with Kirwan, using the residue formula. So that is how things will ultimately be computed. This is related to intersection cohomology because if you have two elements satisfying Keim's condition, two elements alpha and beta, satisfying this condition that their degree in the generator of equivariant cohomology of a point is low enough, then the pairing in intersection cohomology of their images under the Kirwan map is given by the image of the product under the Kirwan map for the desingularization evaluated on the desingularization. So that is what is evaluated over here. That is what is evaluated here. I think this should be M mod mod psi. So this is the object that is being computed, that would be computed here. And the way it's computed via the residue theorem is as the residue, I'll come back to what that means later, of an expression given in terms of the fixed point set of the maximal torus acting on the original manifold M, the restrictions of these classes alpha and beta to all components of the fixed point set, equivariant cohomology of the extended extension of the symplectic form, so omega bar is omega plus mu, minus a small parameter divided by the equivariant Euler class of the normal bundle. And here, the residue is an iterated residue in L variables where L is the rank of the group, the dimension of the maximal torus. So there is a formula for this intersection pairing. And returning to our original example of SU2 acting on projective space, let me remind you the equivariant cohomology of M with respect to the maximal torus is generated by the two classes, psi generating the equivariant cohomology of a point, zeta generating the equivariant cohomology of a point, psi being the equivariant extension of the symplectic form, subject to one relation. The fixed point sets, there are n components of the fixed point set, and the values of the moment map are just the weight vectors, are just the weights minus n up to plus n at intervals of minus n plus 2, minus n plus 4, and so on up to n. Those are the values taken by the moment map. That was what led ultimately to this relation, because what each of these factors says is that this factor vanishes. This is, of course, omega plus mu. So if mu restricting to some fixed point is n minus 2, then this factor is going to vanish. that was where this relation comes from. If n is odd, then 0 is a regular value of the moment map. If n, on the other hand, is even, then if alpha and beta satisfy that the sum of their degrees is equal to the dimension of the symplectic quotient, and if they lie in the subspace V, in other words, their degree in the parameter zeta is less than n over 2 minus 2, then we have that the intersection pairing is given by the pairing in the desingularization, the partial desingularization, and that is given by the residue summing only over those components of the fixed point set where the moment map is positive. Of this expression in a variable x. So we find that since alpha and beta are equivariant cohomology classes, they are polynomials in xi and zeta squared. And replacing zeta by x and xi by the value of the moment map on each component of the fixed point set times x, this expression in the denominator is what comes from the equivariant Euler class of the component of the fixed point set, which is labeled by J. So that is how one determines the intersection pairing in this case. Okay, I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Yes. Yes. Quotiented by, in this case, SU2. The dimension of the thing that you get is exactly this number. The reason for the 2 is that the parameter is that the zeta and xi both have degree 2.
So the dimension of the singular object is 2n minus
2. Yes. Because you start with something that has dimension 2 and you're reducing by SU2. So there are your mu inverse of 0 cuts you down by 3, and then quotienting by SU2 cuts you down by another 3. So it's 2n minus 3.